by Arnaldo Hernandez versus Karina Alonzo. And can you have counsel state their appearances for the record?
Angela Wong on behalf of the appellant Arnaldo Hernandez.
And Peter James
for the
respondent.
All right, counsel, do you wish to reserve any rebuttal time?
Yes, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, please.
3 minutes. All right, you may proceed.
Your Honors, may it please the court. My client would like to thank you for your time today and considering in this case. He loves his daughter and he is grateful that you're hearing this case. He would like to be able to provide as much care and custody to his child as he is able. The issues in this case is quite simple, actually. The parents agreed to a custody arrangement, and then when they went to the court to have that modified, the court changed it without making any kinds of factual determinations whatsoever, did not hold an evidentiary hearing, did not determine what the custodial arrangement had actually been. Rivera requires that the court hold an evidentiary hearing. It requires that the court disregard whatever labels the parties have put on the custody arrangement, take evidence on what time each parent is actually spending with the child, and determine, based on that, whether this is a primary physical custody or joint physical custody. And the reason for that is because the standard for modifying the arrangement changes depending on whether it's joint or primary.
Counsel, do you have any idea how the judge got herself into that position? I mean, how was it that she thought it could just be decided on the pleadings and look at the original papers and that's it?
I'm not sure. I think the judge looked at this original agreement and decided the agreement, I can interpret the agreement to mean that the parties wanted this, and so therefore I'm just enforcing the agreement that the parties agreed on. But Rivera specifically says that factual findings are crucial to enforce or modify a custody order.
Right. So, I mean, even in our Mizrachi opinion, we said that when there was an agreement, it could be enforced, but if there's an ambiguity, you have to have a hearing to determine the intent of the parties. Here, the court did it without anything.
The court did nothing. They didn't have an evidentiary hearing at all.
But wasn't this at least on for a motion hearing to have argument about this and say, hey, Judge, we have facts to present on our motions, and can you set it for an evidentiary hearing?
They did ask at the motion hearing and say, hey, we need to then have an evidentiary hearing, if I remember correctly. The court determined they didn't need an evidentiary hearing. They determined that Bluestein didn't apply, and so therefore he could just determine this was primary custody, I'm just enforcing primary custody, and then move forward, entering an order without taking any evidence. Didn't the court
maybe Mr. James will be able to explain that.
Didn't the court heavily rely on the stipulation of the parties?
As far as with the original stipulation or the March one?
The original.
The original. The court relied solely on the original stipulation and looked at it and said, there's some weird language in here. It says it's going to be a joint physical custody arrangement, though we know it's not. And then that's the only thing he looked at and said, so therefore, they intended it to be primary physical custody. I'm going to interpret this like it's a contract. I'm going to enforce it like a contract. I'm not going to check what these parties are actually doing and determine under Nevada law what label is actually the correct label to apply to their custody.
And am I reading the record correctly when it says that neither party used that stipulation in their pleadings for the modification? Is that correct?
As far as I can tell, neither party referenced the March 31st stipulation. The motions were done. Arnaldo did his motions pro per. I can't remember if Karina had counsel prepare hers. Neither party referred to that stipulation at all. If there had been time to give evidence, we may have gotten a sense of whether or not they had been following the alternating week schedule that modification had set out, or if they had been following the split time that the original decree had set out, which gave Arnaldo 2 full days and then 2 half days in a week.
On that point then, Ms. Wall, did you look at the family law section's amicus brief?
I did.
What do you think? Do we need to do something here in this case, or is that for another day to determine what a day really means? And the family law section suggests even using hours now, and even though Rivera says not to.
I think Rivero says don't discount hours. You can look at a global what's going on in a year. It doesn't say don't count an hour if a parent is using a part of a day. I think that this is this case actually demonstrates the family law section's point quite well. The original decree, assuming that that was what the parties were doing, we don't know if that's what the parties were doing because there was no evidentiary hearing, but assuming that's what they were doing, Arnaldo had custody from 5:30 on Tuesdays to 11 on Friday. The court only paid attention to Wednesday and Thursday, and then credited Tuesday and Friday, apparently, to the mother, even though midnight to 11 a.m. on Friday is half a day. That's a significant period of time. That's time where a parent is having to be responsible to getting a child breakfast or to school or to all of the various appointments that could be happening during that first half of the day. And that just got discounted, and Arnaldo got no credit for the custody time that he's spending on half a day on Tuesdays and half a day on Fridays. Again, assuming that's what they were actually doing, we didn't have an evidentiary hearing, so we don't know. So I think that the amicus brief is exactly on point on that. The judges are applying how to count the days however they think is appropriate, and as a result, you'll have cases like this one where the judge just looks at whole days, ignores half days, and if you count his half days, he's got 141.9 days in a year that he's got custody of the child, if you count it by hours. Or if you take the Virginia court, they cited that as well, that gives credit for half days, then you could count it as a 4 days a week, 3 days a week, that he's got custody. I think the first issue is, of course, we don't even know what custody arrangement they had. And the second issue is...
Well, let me ask you this. It seems to me that, at least arguably, you're wrapping up two issues into one. There's what the parties intended, and then there's what the parties are doing. Now, this goes to a larger question, which is the interface between contract law and family law. What the parties intended, they had a contract, they settled it, they signed it, right? Now, under contract law, if we're applying strict contract law, you wouldn't need an evidentiary hearing to find out what the contract meant, unless there's an ambiguity. If there's no ambiguity, the court can determine the meaning of the contract as a matter of law, and nothing else is necessary. It's just a legal interpretation of a legal document, right? Then you have the second question of whether they're actually conforming to the contract or whether they're doing something different. So what's the problem here? You have these kind of fuzzy motions, one of which was filed by a pro per down below. What's he asking the court to do? Is he asking the court to interpret what the parties intended under the contract? Or is somebody asking for modification based on what they're doing and they're alleging that what they're doing is different from the contract? Because those are two completely different analyses.
There's a number of issues in your question.
Right.
Let's see if I can touch on all of them. The first kind of issue that I see is when you're talking about an agreement in a family law setting, there's a child that's involved that's not part of the contract, and the court needs to be considering the best interests of the child. So it's important for the court to not just enforce the agreement without taking evidence and finding out what the actual circumstances are, what the parties are actually doing.
No, but what I'm saying is, I mean, this goes to the interface, as I said, between contract law and family law, but at least with the party's intent. Under contract law, what we'd say is we've determined the party's intent as a matter of law. We don't need to go look any farther than that. Now, the separate issue is it may be that they're not actually following that, and therefore custody ought to be modified based on what they're actually doing, which may be different from what they intended to do. But which of these two, and my question is, these two issues in all the briefing years, they're kind of blurred together, but really they're not the same analysis. They dictate what the district court has to do on remand. So what do you think is the error here?
The error here is they had an agreement. Arnaldo was moved for that agreement to be modified to give him additional time with the child and to take into account that when this agreement was entered, they were both minors, and he was a minor with a job, so he paid child support, and she was a minor in school, so she did not. He was trying to have the case, his time modified so that he could have more time with the child, and so that her continued unemployment wasn't going to always be affecting his child support. Instead of addressing those issues, the court said, I'm going to go back and interpret what you were trying to do 2 years ago and say you were trying to do primary physical custody when you were coming in asking for more time. Instead, I'm going to say you didn't have joint
And that expert was hit with a counter motion filed by the mother
to change
custody. And then it's under Rivera and Bluestein, the court has to go through the hearing process and look at the best interest.
Exactly.
Matters.
Because he asked for a modification, she countered and requested no, say it was always primary physical custody. The court needed to then go through with Rivera and Bluestein and say, This is what kind of a custody arrangement they actually had. This is the kind of custody arrangement they're actually doing. And this is what's going to be in the best interests of the child. This is how I'm going to determine what the child needs. The court didn't make any best interests of the child.
So the best resolution from your perspective is a straight out reversal. Go back, do it again, make a record.
Yes. There is no record in this case. There is no hearing. He made his decision solely on the language of the decree without making any kind of record whatsoever. We don't know what they were doing. We don't know if they were following it. It's difficult to answer Judge Tao's question because we don't have a record of what their intent was or what they were actually doing or whether or not what Arnaldo was requesting would increase his time to a joint custody when it had been a primary or was just going to modify the hours on a joint legal one. We have no record in this case because the court didn't make one.
So simple application of existing law would have resolved this case had there been a hearing of some sort below. We don't need to make new law. We don't need to suggest anything other than just go back and have a hearing.
In terms of creating the record, simple application of existing law, in terms of allocating the correct amount of time to Arnaldo's custody versus the mother's custody, there may need to be some clarification to ensure that Arnaldo gets credit for the hours that he's spending. If he's getting half days, that those hours are being counted as well. As the judge in this case apparently read the decree as being primary because he was only counting those 2 days as being Arnaldo's custody.
That would also
need some clarification there.
That would also allow for consideration of your child support argument as well.
Correct.
Thank you.
I'm nearly to my 3 minutes. I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
All right. So it'll be a little over 3 minutes, 3 minutes, 9 seconds.
May it please the court, this case falls under the category of you can't make this stuff up. It says directly in the decree itself, quote, the parties agreed to call their physical arrangement of the minor child a joint physical custody, even though legally it is not a joint physical arrangement. There is their intent right there. Now, I was counsel at the hearing.
Can't they do that, though? Because under Rivera, there would be a problem. But under Bluestein, you don't have to have a 60-40 split.
Well, the parties already agreed to what was in their best interest of the child. That's one thing. I was actually in the courtroom for the oral argument on Bluestein. And it was all I could do. I physically had to bite my tongue and sit on my hands because I wanted to shout out when the court asked, what did the judge do with the best interest of the child? There's no finding as to it.
But that leads to the big question in this case. No hearing. I mean, no decision that we can look to. No assessment of the facts based upon the request for modification.
There's actually a misconception on that. There is. The parties at the hearing, and it is on page 259 and 260 of the record, the parties are following the schedule. The facts are not in dispute in this case. One fact that wasn't brought up that really is important is during the relevant year, which is 2015. This hearing, the motion was filed beginning of 2016. It was heard in March of 2016. So we're looking at the 2015 year. The father missed 5 whole months of visitation where he had 0 timeshare. That was conceded. It was conceded at the hearing. The parties are following the schedule, but for that 5 month time where the father had no visitation. So right there under Rivera with the stipulated facts, mom has primary physical custody over that calendar year. She did anyway, let alone 5 months.
Is that in the court's order?
I don't know if it's in the order, but it is. The facts are stipulated in the record. Now, fit parents are presumed to act in their children's best interest. Troxell v. Granville, United States Supreme Court, which has been affirmed by this state. parties have already come up with their schedule. So that is what they think is in the child's best interest. And who is in the better position to determine what's in the child's best interest than the parents? Now, everyone is presumed to know the law. And this presumption is not rebuttable. That I cited the case in my brief. I don't remember the exact citation of that. Well, so when a parent...
This is not 100% on point, though. But even if you're right about the custody, let's say there was an agreement. Mom had primary custody. Doesn't there still have to be a finding on the best interest factors?
No, because the parents have already decided. The court did not change anything. The court did not change the schedule.
Then why do we have Bluestein and Rivera? If the presumption is that they know the best and they know the law, then done, right?
I believe that Bluestein is an error in not determining or holding that when a parent decides, when two parents who are fit decide a schedule for their children, that's in their best interest. The court doesn't need to weigh in on that because it's a stipulated thing. If the court went to a trial and then they had to actually make a finding, then yes. But fit parents, when they make an agreement, that's what's in their children's best interest.
But that wasn't accurate here. They came back to court to modify. So obviously that agreement was coming undone.
No.
He was wanted to modify the child support. But your point, Mr. James, is exactly what we discussed in the Mizrachi opinion. And we cited the case that you're referring to. And we said that the parties make an agreement, it's presumed it's in the best interest of the child. But in Mizrachi, it was a motion to clarify what was the agreement. It was not a motion to modify. And we also cited Bluestein and certainly implied that had it been a motion to modify, it would have been a different situation.
Now here, we modified the label. And it went back to the party's initial intent. They knew, and this is where it goes back to where you can't make this stuff up. And the facts of this case are very, very unique. That the parties admitted in writing, signed by everyone, that they know it's not a joint physical custody situation, but they're just going to call it that for whatever their reasons were at the time. Now, they set child support pursuant to primary physical custody. That evidences their intent of what they're trying to do. There's no $100 statutory minimum deviation under Wright versus Osborne and the statutory minimum showing that his child support's offset and they're doing a true Wright v. Osborne. They're not. It was set at 18% of his income, subject to the statutory cap. That's primary physical custody. That shows their intent. Their intent is actually listed in there. It's kind of like having legislative history built into a statute.
Well, this goes actually to the question that I asked your counterpart here, which is, you know, you have the question of contract interpretation versus the question of what they're actually doing. Now, the best answer to my question to her is this: if what we have here is just a motion to clarify what's going on, right? Then you can just say, look, the intent of the parties controls, and we can determine that as a matter of law. And on appeal, we can review that de novo. We don't need any evidence because contract interpretation is a question of law. But isn't the problem here that Karina then filed a motion to modify the terms of the custody? And once you modify it, you're no longer asking the court to determine what we agreed to before, what our intent was when we signed the contract. We want you, judge, to change what we agreed to. So effectively what you're saying is what we agreed to is no longer in effect because I don't like it, I want to change it, things have changed. And doesn't that automatically trigger Rivera and Bluestein where you have to have factual findings on what the best interests of the child are because you're no longer standing by your original intent?
Two parts. One, when they moved to change, that was denied. My client just moved to change the label.
She's changing, but isn't that implicitly saying, I don't like what we originally agreed to. I'm proposing that a contract be no longer in effect as a matter of law. And we're starting from scratch, essentially.
Because the terms of the contract didn't change. Nothing changed. The timeshare didn't change.
Well, presumably, whether it's joint or primary is a material term of the contract, right? And she's asking to change a material term of the contract.
Not really, because the party would go in there saying, we know it's not this. But we're going to call it this anyway, even though it's a legal fiction and it doesn't really exist. Now, the facts, are not an issue. We don't need to hold an evidentiary hearing on this because the facts aren't an issue. They were stipulated at the hearing. The only reason to hold an evidentiary hearing is to determine fact. Fact was stipulated. Parties are following the schedule, except for the 5 months that Dad took off during that year. There you go. Mom has primary physical custody right there, just for those reasons.
What about what the family law section stated, and also Ms. Wall stated? Depends how you count it. And it's, if you count it a certain way, you could say dad had 3 days and mom had 4 days a week joint custody.
Well, we don't really need to get into that because dad missed 5 months of his time.
You look at a whole year, so that's obviously a very negative fact against him, but again, the judge didn't determine the impact of that.
Well, the parties stipulated they were following, except for the 5 months. And you miss 5 months of time when you're facing what could be a close call, whether you're flirting with the 60-40 rule here, you miss 5 months, you're not even close.
Well, even if the facts aren't stipulated, are stipulated and not in dispute, doesn't the district court still have to make findings as to what those facts are?
It would have been a better record to do that, but it's in the record. And the findings can be implied through the record. And it's pretty clear here.
No. They need to be in the order of the court. We can't imply.
I don't think you want us to take a record and get into the head of the judge that may be different than what's written in the order?
Well, Nevada case law says if the facts are clear, you can imply findings from the record itself. And given the facts are stipulated, he missed 5 months, the fact that they were following the schedule, it is primary physical custody to mom. This is a very unique situation in this particular case because of what they wrote into their agreement, if you will. And there might be a little problem with it because
what was the 5 month time period explained as to why he missed it?
I believe he left for work, something to do with that. That he was gone for an extended period of time.
I mean, there's a difference between missing it because of neglect, lack of attention, you don't care, your child's not your priority, versus you were sent out of town on a work assignment and you have paid child support, so you took the assignment.
No, he agreed to, I believe it was military, I believe he joined something in there. I'm speaking just from
the military. Well, if it's military, it's even more so because of the provisions in federal law that protect people in military. So that another reason for a hearing for the judge to sort that out, what that 5 months meant. So let's say the 5 months didn't mean anything because it was an exception under federal law. Now you're back to the original schedule. Doesn't the court have to determine exactly what that schedule meant? And that's the whole point of the family law section's amicus brief. In this case, it's close to joint custody under Ribeiro, and then you take the next step and look at Bluestein and have to determine best interest to make the final decision whether it's joint or primary.
But what undercuts that is the parties already said, we know it's not joint. We know this, but we're just going to...
But they're wrong. The judge has to determine it as soon as this motion is filed. It takes away what the parties think. The judge has to determine it.
As far as the label.
Is this joint? Because part of the decision-making process is what's in the best interest of the child.
Which the parties already did by creating the schedule. And they know the legal ramifications when they agree to a schedule.
But you're also, even in response to Justice Gibbons' question...
Judge Gibbons, don't confuse me.
Judge Gibbons, you already, I believe, are illustrating the problem with no record. Because we don't know how the judge made his or her decision. And we don't know what consideration was made with respect to any label. The label that the parties agreed to or the label that the court placed upon it ultimately. That is, as I believe my questions are signaling, is my very significant concern in this case and others. Because just because the parties called it something, as Judge Gibbons pointed out, they were wrong. They were wrong. And then we came back to court and there was a request for modification and we are left on appeal looking at something that has certainly in my mind some legal holes, if not factual holes. So what do we do?
In this particular case, you uphold because the parties, it's clear in the contract. If you just take a look at the agreement the parties reached, they knew it wasn't a joint physical custody arrangement. They didn't set child support pursuant to that. That really shows the party's intent. Now, Rivera is very clear that the labels don't really matter what the parties call it. They care about what the parties do. And the schedule here is a primary physical custody schedule to the respondent. Okay. Now, if you want to change Nevada law and go with something that the amicus brief suggested, then that would require basically overruling Rivera and Bluestein.
Well, now, we're not going to do that, obviously, so...
I think Newsday took it to...
Can I ask you about child support for a minute? Because it's a related issue here. So, frankly, what happened here is typical of what I did when I was in district court. I mean, you look at it, is there a 20% change of income? Yes, you have a hearing, you determine what the income is, you set it using the formula. But the case law requires an additional step, and that's to determine best interest. So that wasn't determined on the child support either. Now it seems, I know what you argued in your brief, but nonetheless, case law says the court has to determine best interest.
And that's where the argument is circular. And I outlined this in my brief, that Nevada law says you have to find out what's in the best interest of the child. But it's presumed that it's in the best interest of the child to have child support set at the statutory formula. So there doesn't really need to be a finding of best interest because the law already accounts for it. And I have that complete analysis detailed out in my brief that really what should happen here is the burden should shift to the other side to say why it's not in the best interest to set it pursuant to the statute. Because that's what a statutory presumption does.
Is even if you're right, when there's no hearing, it's kind of hard to do that.
But again, here the facts were stipulated. We knew what the income was. We based it upon his income and his form, what he provided. And we did show the math showing that it is a 20% change. And the judge properly changed it to what Nevada law states, which is presumed to be in the child's best interest. So we have case law saying it is presumed. So it would seem redundant to put it into the order when Nevada law already says that it is.
Well, it's not a presumption that can't be rebutted.
And that's why the burden shifts to the other side to show why it's not. And they didn't argue it.
And you have a hearing and you go through the process. I mean, his original motion, of course, was to modify the child support. So he brought this all on himself. If he'd stayed quiet, this case never would have happened and child support would have been different and the custody arrangement would have been as it was. But he filed his motion. So it's a typical rare reaction. There's a reaction.
And let's see if you can dodge lie.
Yes. So, well, Mr. James, you did a really, really good job on this. Earlier this year, you've had several other cases where you were probably taking the opposite approach. Of course, you have your client the way you have your client.
Yes, and one thing I'd like to talk about briefly on Bluestein and Rivera, I think the court took a wrong step in this. Federal law for the IRS says that joint custody is 50-50, and that's what most states agree. Here we said 64.
You're challenging Bluestein and Rivera here in this forum on this case?
Making a comment on the amicus brief.
Okay.
That it's 60-40 was a wide step, and now you can go 38, 37, 36. It's going down where there is no more joint custody.
Right. And Rivera 1 was written that way, so Rivera 2 was intended to solve that problem, but then Bluestein cut back on Rivera 2.
If the court has further questions, I'm happy to answer.
All right, thank you, counsel. And you have 3 minutes and 9 seconds to rebut.
Thank you, Your Honors. I just, first on those missing 5 months, it was military service. He joined the military for various reasons that didn't get into the record because there was no evidentiary hearing. He wasn't able to continue with his military service. The fact that he tried to serve the country shouldn't be held against him going forward now. When they're trying to have a custody arrangement. If the intent of the parties could be at issue, if we were talking about they disagreed on what the terms of this said, but they came to the court and said, we need you to modify this, we need you to readdress this and determine if the child support amount and the time amount is the correct child support and the time amount. That's when Rivera and Bluestein say, you need to make factual findings that the record can be based on. It's not good enough that if you go looking in the record, you can find some facts that maybe support that. It's not the appellate court's job to go fish. Rivera specifically said that factual findings are crucial to enforce or to modify and for appellate review for that exact reason. We don't know what the judge was thinking.
Right, and what about the Davis opinion from 2015? It's not just any factual findings. It has to be a certain type of factual findings. And the court explained in detail in that opinion why that's needed, you know, the specificity.
Correct. And in this case, we don't have any kind of specificity at all. We have one paragraph that says, well, there's because of this ambiguous language and because I'm only going to count 2 days out of the 3 days that Arnaldo has custody, I'm going to say that this was primary physical custody and of his child support and make no findings as to what the best interests of the child is. And to some extent, we're guessing that that's all that he was relying on because the order doesn't set anything out. It makes no findings because he didn't have a hearing and he didn't, and the court didn't explain its reasoning. So the problem here with this label, whether or not we should enforce that it was primary or joint because of their bad language in the decree, isn't what's at issue once they've come back and they're asking for a modification. We're not overturning anything to go back and say, count the days, count the actual time that they've got with it. Rivero asks the court to make findings on what time is the parent with the child. Bluestein had a similar custody arrangement as this case, different days of the week, but a similar ratio, and said, go back and make findings, how much time are they actually with the child? We would only be clarifying how to count that to ensure that the full time is being counted and that time isn't being discounted. Rivero wasn't trying to say discount certain time that one of the parents is spending with the child. So what should be done in this case, very simply, is it should be sent back with instructions to the district court to have an evidentiary hearing, to make the necessary findings, and with instructions to tell the court to determine what the best interest is and that the full time, Arnold's full time, is taken into account. Thank you.
All right, thank you, counsel.